Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host Chris Broad and I've just eaten some very unpleasant chocolate. And we're joined by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how you doing? Do you like chocolate?
You're looking... I'm good. Oh. I'm in my Christmas pajamas that my sister-in-law bought me, which is very kind. And festive. And I'm currently watching a man about to vomit because he just opened a packet of, is it Liberia chocolate or Liberian?
It's called Libera, but for the longest time Libera. I thought it was called Liberia because the other brand of chocolate is, of course, Ghana, isn't it? Ghana.
Yeah, exactly. So, that's probably what they were sort of aiming for. And you're not impressed with the mouthfeel, the texture and the taste of the disgusting chocolate.
It just tasted like plastic meets socks. Like I put it in my mouth, it just tastes like socks. I don't know why. What's going on? It's been sitting in the studio for about 3 months, to be fair, but it's still, It says the expiration date is May 2022.
Yeah.
That's bollocks. Something's gone off in that chocolate because that is really bad. And I'm glad we don't film these podcasts because I don't want to see people, just me sitting here. I don't want people to see that, just sitting here eating Liberia chocolate, being sick everywhere. No one deserves
look,
to see that.
I record them. The footage is up there somewhere. It's on an Amazon server somewhere. Man. Unloved and undiscovered, never to be seen again. I think with, is it because you've been to the gym a few times recently and doing your chest workouts that your body's now rejecting chocolate? Maybe it's that.
It's that. I have been going to the gym. I am going to be the fittest man in the world this year. 2022 happens every year. I start off well. And then after about 1 week, it all goes down the pan. But I'm going to the gym. I've been doing a chest press. I've been running around. Even listened to a few Abroad Japan podcasts as well to just check how the audio is while I'm on the treadmill. And
were you impressed? Impressed with my post-production?
No, I wasn't. I don't like listening to myself back doing anything. Watching myself's hard enough, let alone listening to my voice. So it was a hard thing. But the sound of my ferocious running on the treadmill drowned it out. It was brilliant. Yeah. I'm so fast, so fast and speedy. Bragging about my running. To be fair, I was the fastest runner in my school in like 1996. And I can still run. Like I ran at least 12 to 13 kilometers per hour on that treadmill. I was quite impressed.
How long do you run for? That's the question, though, isn't it?
I don't think that's important at this stage.
It sounds important to me, mate.
Isn't. What's important is I'm a fast runner, fastest in my school. Put it on my LinkedIn. Put it on my Wikipedia. Let's go.
Write it. Do it.
Yeah. Are you getting fit for 2022?
You sit every year, don't you? And then you just—I mean, I've got a little weights bench there, and it just sits there, and it just taunts me. I'm struggling. I don't know what happened with 2021, but I just never have time for anything. And we're doing less than ever before. I'm taking fewer holidays. I'm away less, and yet I just can't find the time to bloody do a bit of working out. I'm a very lazy/busy man.
There's always time, Pete. There's always time. I want to write a book this year somehow for my 10-year anniversary, and I need to find time somehow for that, but I don't know how that's going to happen.
You've already written one in Japanese, apparently. That's what I've been seeing on social media, Sunshine.
I have. We'll talk about that in the next episode, though. We'll talk about the next episode.
All right.
Don't want to get ahead of myself. I mean, I need to have a flick through the book. I only got a copy of it today, but we'll talk about my Japanese book in the next episode. After I've had a look through it. We've got a story this week, guys, from Crystal. Crystal from Vancouver. Hi, Chris. I like Vancouver. It's nice. I've got family there. Mm. Hi, Chris and Pete. I'm writing to you from Vancouver, Canada, long-time listener, but my first time sending in an email. I spent 6 months on a working holiday visa in Japan between September 2019 to March 2020. Being a freshly graduated student, I was running around Japan on a shoestring budget during my last 2 weeks there. One day, while I was in Hiroshima, after climbing a horrendous hill, to access an art museum, I found out the ticket price was nearly 10 times what I'd expected it to be, checking the fare price online. Needless to say, with my low budget, I decided against the museum and took a seat outside since the hill offered a great view of Hiroshima next to the river. After a few minutes, a middle-aged Japanese man came out to also appreciate the view and asked me in Japanese if I could take a photo of him with his phone. Because I'm Asian and I could speak Japanese at a decent level at the time, at first glance, I often get mistaken for a genuine Japanese person. So he was surprised to find out that I wasn't from there. We ended up talking for a while, and out of nowhere, he asked to see my hand. Oh, God. Hesitantly, I obliged, and it turns out he was trying to do a palm reading. However, it didn't end there. After the reading, from his bag, he pulled out a big, worn-looking binder and a notebook. He began asking me a ton of questions, like how many letters were in my name, my birthday, etc., all while writing down numbers 1 to 9 in multiple 3x3 grids in various patterns based on my answers in combination with references to the old book. To this day, I still have no idea what was going on with those numbers. Through this, he was apparently able to discern many things about my past and future. The most interesting fact being that apparently I was meant to meet the love of my life last year. And I can confirm that this did not happen. Before we parted ways, I asked to take a photo of him with my film camera next to the view of Hiroshima. So now I've got a picture of some random Japanese man doing double peace signs in my photo album. Have you ever had your future told while in Japan? What are some common fortune-telling practices there? Keep up the good work. I'm wishing you a great holiday season. All the best, guys. Crystal from Vancouver. I mean, That's nice, isn't it? I don't know. I don't like palm reading.
Hands.
What do you make of it?
Hakabuchikan. There's a lot of action happening on this side of the hill. To be quite frank, it's fantastic. I really want to see this picture of this old man from Crystal. So give us a tweet if you email it. Chris won't find it in the email box, but give us a tweet of it. But I just very much like the fact that it's almost the thing is. It's difficult, isn't it? If you do that and you are in the West or anywhere apart from like, I don't know, there's this kind of infantilization of all Japanese men that it's not as creepy when all Japanese men do it. You know what I mean? If I was like hanging out on a hill with me book of runes, chatting up lasses, it'd be like, you fucking creep. But when an old Japanese man does it, you sort of go, oh, so solemn, so clever.
Oh, so wise. It's Mr. Miyagi out of Karate Kid, isn't it? It's old wisdom. Wise man. I want to try that. I want to go up to people in Hiroshima and be like, let me touch your hand. Show me your hand. Oh, yeah. You're going to get married. You're going to get married. Pick a number between 1 and 8. Yeah. Yeah. I do wonder what he was doing. Was he? I think he secretly worked for a magazine in Hiroshima and he makes Sudoku. Mm. And he was just getting some numbers or something to make a Sudoku
Celestial numbers that mean things to people. I think with maybe his kind of projections, his kind of Nostradamus style projections on Crystal's life, it may be a kind of it may have been delayed by the pandemic. So maybe it's going to happen next year, Crystal. If your man or woman is to see you in the future, they may have been delayed somehow.
That's a good point. Good point. Mm. Keep an eye out for 2022, Crystal. Yeah. See what comes your way. What I love about that story is it's a pretty unremarkable sort of event, isn't it? A man just touching your hand and writing some numbers down in a book. But because it's on a holiday, you just remember these moments when you bump into strangers. You just remember them so clearly. Like I still remember the time I went to like a hot spring in Yamagata and I came out and I was just sitting on a bench, really tired and worn out and relaxed, like you are, you know, when you're sort of dehydrated like a prune after going in the onsen. And some man just came out, an old man. He was wise because he's Japanese.
Wise old man.
And he came out, wise old man, Mr. Miyagi, innit? And he came out with some cherries and just went, "This is cherries. Cherries, very famous." And I was like, "Yes." And he gave me the cherries and walked off. And I remember that clear as day, even though it was 8.5 years ago, just because it was an interaction with a stranger.
Munch them down.
Exactly. I made short work of those cherries. But you remember those things, don't you? You remember those interactions with strangers. That's what like defines a trip or a holiday or just travels, just meeting people, having those wonderful moments, having your palms red. Wonderful.
I've said it before. There was a guy in Golden Guy who basically just... he's a bit of local colour. He'll go into a couple of the bars and he'll pick up a guitar and he'll start playing "All My Loving" by the Beatles, and which is very nice, and it certainly sticks in the mind. But if you can watch any video on YouTube of someone going to Golden Guy, this tit is in the background always with his guitar playing "All My Loving," and it was all magical to us when we saw it, but you could see the tiredness of the manager who keeps his guitar behind the bar, the tiredness in his soul of hearing "All My Loving" every couple of hours every single night by this guy who probably just for free booze.
I mean, I get that whenever I go to Kyoto. There's the path of the philosopher. It's a little stream that runs down the side of Kyoto, and it's a lovely place for a walk. And there's always a man who'll approach you randomly, and you're like, "Oh God, am I going to get my palm red? Am I going to get told when I'm going to get married?" And it's just a man who picks up flowers from beside the river, makes it into like a little boat. What can be described as a boat made of flowers, and then he gives it to you, and you drop it in the river. And if it's upright and it sort of lands upright and floats off down the river, you get good fortune. And every time I get to Kyoto, I bump into him, and he acts as though it's the first time we've met, and it's just like having this like Groundhog Day style interaction every like 1 to 2 years. Every time I'm walking along Philosopher's Path, because he's just there, he's just doing it with
the
flowers.
Is it more satisfying than talking to a bloke from the northeast of England though every week for no good reason or profit?
Every time I drop that flower boat in, Pete, and I don't know if it's going to land upright or not, I get a little rush of excitement. It's like taking a drug. Not that I've ever taken drugs. Never done that. lead us into the story of the week then, Pete. What have we got this week? What's going on in the world, the land of the rising sun?
First things first, coffee's a drug, mate. You're sick of sipping a Boss Coffee Black right now. Coffee's a drug,
coffee.
Mate. Did you not even know that?
Tally's
coffee's
coffee.
A drug, mate. Coffee's a drug. Chris, now... this new story tickled my emotional ivories because we all know how difficult it is to do anything in Japan, thanks to your friend and mine, bureaucracy and admin. when you've got like an office job, when you've got a job that kind of relies on, you know, different working parts of different people, to end your employment with a company, you have to fill in like a million forms. You've got to talk to your employer. You've got stuff like unpaid overtime to clear out. You've got unused vacation days because the Japanese work so hard. They are constantly, the company constantly owes them time and money. But to make all of this easier, to kind of help you kind of tidy up the admin a little bit, there's a company. And we've spoken about this company before, but the changes they've made to their operations really made me laugh. It's a Taishoku Daiko, a job quitting proxy service. I forget the name of it. But in Tokyo, basically, it just holds your hand and just goes, "Right, pay us the money. We will effectively just cease your contract with your company for you. We will talk to them. We'll sort it all out. And you don't have to worry about the emotional or physical hardship it is to actually finish your job." And they've added an extra service. And I don't know whether it's about COVID. I don't know whether it's, because of the job market's changed so much. But now they've got like an all-you-can-eat service, like an all-you-can-quit plan. For 3,500 yen a month, you can use the service twice a year, because if you were like quitting a job, you might want to quit the job like today. You might, "I'm done with this. I'm sick. I'm getting out of here. Tell my boss to go F himself. Thank you, Taishoku Daiko." And you clear off. But in the panic, you may join a job that you don't want. You may join up with the company that you're panicking. You just want to get away from your previous company, and you may want to quit that job as well.
Get a job with Pete Donaldson.
jump from Chris Broad Enterprises to Pete Donaldson Franchises, and you're probably panicking again. You probably want to leave it again.
Absolutely.
So you could basically they've added this all you can quit system to the Teshoku Daiko.
Bloody hell.
And you could quit a job twice a year. But someone has pointed out rather hilariously that you can only use it twice a year, and the cancellation fee for the all you can quit system is the same as what you'd be paying if you used it for a year anyway. So the cancellation fee doesn't make any sense. And it also has an auto-renewal, and the window of turning that off is 14 days at the end of the year, which means you could find yourself having to get yourself a job-quitting service. Get yourself a subscription-quitting job-quitting service, if that makes any sense.
Oh, my head.
But fundamentally, Chris, would you have found this kind of service useful when you quit your job as a TEFL teacher, when you were in the JET program? How did you sort of broach the subject that you were going to be leaving the TEFL service basically not doing it anymore?
First of all, I'm just astonished this exists. Can you imagine this? does we have this in the UK? Does it exist?
I think there's probably something like that. But I mean, how much admin is there really? They send you a P45 at the end of your thing. You get paid out for any holiday. It's all a negotiation. The only thing that remains to be seen is like one of those excruciating exit interviews. They're quite tedious, aren't they?
I guess so. I mean, I think it's because maybe in Japan, a lot of employment's very much for life, right? They say it's a lifetime job. So to leave a company like that is a big deal. Yeah, I think there's an expectation you're just going to be there for 40 years, retire, and then die. And so maybe there's that added pressure. Maybe they need these sort of companies. It just seems really dystopian and sinister. You have to hire a company to help you quit your job. There's something very bizarre about that. I mean, no, luckily on the JET program, it's very easy. Like they ask you like an entire year in advance. You have to decide if you're going to stick around or not, right? It's a pretty like ridiculous time to quit. Like I think you leave your job in July, and you have to decide by September or October the year before if you're going to quit, so they can like find a new person
and make
it all go very smoothly. Every now and then, a very naughty foreign person teaching English will just go anyway and cause a shit storm of issues and problems and taint all foreigners in Japan. So if you come on the JET program or you come here to teach English, try to avoid quitting early unless your company is really bad and treats you badly. Because
fuck them. It's a language school.
Badly.
They make profit. They make money. This isn't the education system. Fuck them. That's what I say. Just walk out on them.
And that is why you didn't get on the JET program, Pete. They probably could have told by your ruthless streak, cheekiness, that you would have just walked out the door halfway through the contract and gone and done something unproductive in a bar. But like, it is sinister. And so you need a job quitting company to quit the job quitting company. Is that the irony of the situation? I'd love to meet some people and interview them who have done this. Who've actually done this process. Like, I just can't wrap my head around it. It's just so ridiculous.
It's very expensive as well. And the fact that they're quite restrictive with their own contracts, it just makes you sort of go, guys, what are you doing? This isn't a good look for you.
So you got to pay $400, right? 39,000 yen for this special job quitting service. I mean, it could work. Could be a good price. But how do you get out of it then? How are you supposed to get out of it?
Well, I mean, at the end of the year, you sort of go, well, I don't want to go forward with this job quitting service. I'm quite happy with my job. And then, but you've only got a 14-day period in which to cancel, unfortunately. So it's actually quite restrictive in itself. That's what I find quite exciting about it.
God. Exciting or sinister, you decide, guys. But I'm going to dig deeper into this. This is quite an interesting thing. We'll be back with your questions and comments in the fax machine in just a moment, guys.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania. Too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
And we're back with the fax machine. What have we got this week from our listeners, Mr. Dawson?
We got a message from Ayana. Hiya, Chris and Pete. Do you ever get homesick? And do you have like comforting things that remind you of England, other than visiting that weird British theme park, of course? If so, what sort of things do you get up to remind yourself of Britain, Chris? Enjoy the end of year celebrations. Fingers crossed for a better year in 2022. Well, we're already there if you're listening to our voices right now, unless I've done something horrific with the upload system.
We're there. I mean, I sit down every day and I watch a speech by Boris Johnson, and I get fired up and motivated, and I feel like I could do anything when I hear Boris Johnson speak. Also, I eat British crisps. Somebody sent me, like a family member sent me a box, a crate no less, of British crisps, Walker's cheese and onion, McCoy's salt and vinegar, Wotsits, Quavers, Skips, Hula Hoops. I got the whole lot, and I've almost eaten them all in the last 10 days. It's pretty worrying. And that is why the gym hasn't done anything.
It's necessary.
The last 2 weeks,
What is the difference? I watch a lot of, there's that bloody, it's like, it's set in an airport, airport security, Melbourne. And it's just loads of people, massive families coming in from like China with so much carry-on and so much checked-in luggage filled with spices and vegetables you could easily buy in Chinatown in Sydney or Melbourne or wherever they're landing, and stuff like that. And they always get in trouble, and they're always told, you can't bring in all of this food. How can you get away with that? Just importing crisps, random crisps from any old, any arsehole from the world, any arsehole in the world.
I don't know, to be honest. I don't know how they got through. It was quite a lot of crisps. Like, there must have been some fees to be paid, some taxes to be paid on this importing of British crisps. But I mean, that's pretty much what I do. I do watch a lot of like British sitcoms and shows, but I don't need a reminder of the UK, because every day that I live in Japan, you know, people ask, where am I from? And I go, the UK. And then we end up talking about the UK quite a lot. So I feel like it's never really been an issue. I don't need to be reminded of England, but if I do, of course, I have the podcast every week, Ayana, with Pete Donaldson, and that is all the British culture I could ever need. We got one here from Tari, like Marie but with a T, from New Orleans. Hello, Punky Pete and Cheeky Chris. I travelled to Japan for the first time in the fall of 2019 for the Rugby World Cup, and I had walked by a not so inviting bar called Lennon, a rock bar. When I opened the door, Lil Walter fill my ears. Walking in, I saw a wall full of albums and a lovely owner, Hiroshi, and his wife Satomi. Once he realized I was from New Orleans, he started to pull NOLA artists' albums, Dr. John, Alan Toussaint, and so many others. There are so many holes in the wall bars in Japan. What are some of your favorites? All the best, Tari from New Orleans. Pete, you like holes in the wall. You like holes in the wall. Give me your best.
I do.
What have you got?
I do. I mean, there's bar in Osaka, there's bar Rock and also I think Rock Bar Cherry Bomb, I think, in Osaka. You've got the classic bar Rockaholic in Tokyo, and there's also one called, I think, Bar Rock around the corner as well, which is quite fun. They've got free dartboard and warm sake and lovely shots of Yogurito. I've not treaded the dirt in my boots in any rock bars in Sendai, but maybe Chris, you could do something. You can do something for the listeners here on the podcast, and you know, right now, what time is it?
Sapa Bar.
Where you are, just get out there, find yourself a rock bar in Sendai.
I mean, I've already got a ramen shop. That's more than enough for me, to be honest. Still struggling to run this bloody place. There's the cocktail bar in Shibuya that I always thought was like a tourist trap. But it's supposed to be quite good. It's the one where they make movies after the drinks. And Charla went there recently for one of her videos and told me about it. I think it's called The Whales of August, right? The Whales of August. It's cool.
That's it. Yeah. They name every cocktail after a film. But the good thing about it is that the Japanese don't necessarily, certainly the owner of this bar, doesn't necessarily know what a big Hollywood hit is. So that he will sort of go. So there'll be films. I mean, look, I've got a lot of love for the film Air Bud 2 about or Soccer Dog, a dog
what
that plays
on
soccer.
Earth is that?
Like, it's that kind of era. It's that kind of like caliber of film. He names some of the cocktails after, and you've got the big ones. Like, you know, I don't know, Avatar. But then there's like films like The Untouchables and stuff. And you're like, why have you named a cocktail after The Untouchables? It's very, very strange indeed. And everything's written in Romaji kind of characters. And it's good. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
I mean, I haven't really understood the concept. I think you sort of sit down, you say a film like Jurassic Park or Schindler's List. I'm just reeling off Steven Spielberg.
Sit down at a bar and say Schindler's. What? I want the Schindler's List drink, please.
That came out because I thought Jurassic Park. What does Steven Spielberg do next? Oh yeah, just working my way through his portfolio.
Have a Ready Player One. Let's go for Ready Player One, Chris. Lordy.
But then they make a drink based on the film. So for Jurassic Park, what would they do?
Amber. They put little flies in it. Little mosquito amber, mosquito in amber in there. It's very much.
It could work.
They never explain their process. They never explain their creative process. They just name. But it's interesting because you do see films like just weird films that no one like.
I want to throw Sherlock Bones Undercover Dog at them. It's a dreadful film from like the 90s.
Exactly.
And just see what they do. Will they look it up?
Yeah.
God knows. We got one here from Jackie from Austin. Over to you, Mr. Dawson.
Hello, Jackie from Austin, Texas, USA. My name is Jackie. I'm a fourth-year university student in Austin, Texas. This morning, I found out that I was offered a job in Japan. Since I've been aiming to work in Japan for years, I've gotten really comfortable with the thought of being on my own and adapting to Japan. However, I've never really got over my fears about earthquakes. I've been in Austin my whole life. It's a really safe area with basically no natural disasters. Since the UK is a pretty safe place, do you guys have any tips for getting used to earthquakes? How did you react during your first earthquake experience? Thank you so much, Jackie from Austin, Texas, the USA. When was your first earthquake experience? Did the earth move for you, Chris?
Especially after I've eaten loads of chicken and I'm walking around on the bloody floor. I mean, look, when was the last time I experienced an earthquake that was big? It would have been about 10 months ago when I was in Hokkaido. I can't remember. There was a big one in 2021, the biggest that I've ever felt, actually. And it scared the hell out of me. I was in a building. I think it was like 10, 15 floors up. And I thought I was going to just die. It was really scary. But that was the only one I've had a really big time, a really big experience of it. Mm. The first time would have been probably 6 months into living in Japan when I was in my apartment. I was sitting at my desk on the floor, just in my apartment, and the whole sort of building just sort of swayed. When you're in a big building, often it doesn't shake like in movies and things fall over. You just get more of a swaying feeling. So if you're in a tall, if you're a skyscraper or a big building, you'll just feel like a gentle swaying, hopefully. But if you're in a smaller place, you'll feel a lot of shaking. I am worried looking around my studio right now at all the glasses, all the cutlery, all the crockery. God forbid if there's an earthquake, it's all going to come crashing down. It's going to be the messiest ramen shop ever. It's going to be awful. What am I going to do?
A lot of it is, I mean, surely a lot of it is kind of polystyrene and plastic and stuff. So you might be all right. You might be all right.
Yeah. How dare you? This is real stuff in here. It's a real glass.
This is real stuff, for crying out loud. It's a set. It's not real. You know, like, have you been to Austin, Chris? There's like, I think they call it the Colorado River that runs through it. It's a big bridge going over the top of it. A lot of bats. I want to say bats under there. Maybe not. Either way, I love Austin, one of my favorite cities in anywhere really. And they call it the Colorado River, but that I know the Colorado River is long, but I thought that goes like west to east, down from California up to Colorado. How is the Colorado River heading down to Texas? If someone could let us know, not necessarily Japanese based, but fuck it, we talked about leaving your job about 5 minutes ago, so it's all good. How does the Colorado River work?
Why is that so difficult to understand? It's a long, winding river. I don't think it does, though. I think you're getting confused.
The Colorado River goes from California up to Colorado, but I'm fairly certain in Austin, Texas, it's called the Colorado River, the big river that goes through Austin. And I'm confused. Is that part of the Colorado River?
You got it wrong. We're going to look it up.
Oh, yeah, I've got it wrong. Let's make that clear. Go away and look it up.
We'll solve this mystery in next week's episode. I'll talk about my book. But for now, guys, no matter where you might be, out in the big wide world, thank you for joining us this week on the podcast. We'll be back to do it all over again next time. Send your questions in to us at abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. And no matter where you might be, out in the big wide world, have yourself a great day. Bye for now. Colorado River in Austin. Now I've heard everything.
Abroad in Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster, Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more. Then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.